This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Be sure to visit my webpage at dr-history.com for over 440 true stories of the Old West. Also, now available on Amazon, my first book, a historical fiction based on true events entitled Coal Miner to Cowboy. The story of a young man born in England in 1850. He wants to be a cowboy and makes his way to America, travels from New Orleans to Independence on a steamboat, hires on as a teamster to Santa Fe, then on a cattle drive to Bozeman, Montana. He also rides shotgun on a stagecoach. He travels with a wagon train, and on his two-year journey, he meets some famous people and keeps a journal of his adventures. The book contains a lot of the true stories from my podcast and is now available on Amazon. Visit my webpage for a link to Amazon for the book, Coal Miner to Cowboy.
The one, the only, Dr. History.
Good morning, Zeb.
Good morning. How are you? Oh, by the way, I got to give you an update.
Yes.
On your book, From Coal Miner to Cowboy, I am right in the part of the book where the love affair starts with Anna.
Okay.
Yeah, that's where I'm at.
Okay, and that's about as far as it goes. Yeah, well, this is a family-oriented book.
Now, you're
book,
not supposed
Zeb.
To tell me anything that.
Okay, all right. Okay. I just wanted to disclaimer there.
Yeah, the dad wrote in, and there was a look over at Anna like, gee, maybe I'll go to California.
Yeah. Well,
so
okay.
See, you know I'm reading the book.
And that's a true person. Anna Hayes is a true person, and her father, Captain Hayes, is a true person.
Yeah, and basically, I'm trying to remember, it takes place going to the City of Rocks.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes, and at the back of the book, there are each chapter, I've got a list of the true people, places, and things, so people can see what is actual nonfiction.
Absolutely. It's a great book, and I compliment you, and I'm hopefully going to have it done by next Tuesday.
Thank you.
All right.
So, folks, you can find it at my webpage, dr-history.com. There's a link there, or just go to Amazon, and it's Coal Miner to Cowboy by Ken Turner, and I've checked with my printer, and they've sent some books out already on Amazon.
Good.
I've got two five-star reviews on Amazon.
Good.
Yeah.
Are they dropping them at the locations with their little hovercrafts, or?
I don't know how they're getting there, but they're getting there.
Okay.
But around here, you know, folks, you can get it at Farmer's Corner, Declo Country Store, at Child's World.
Good.
Mad River Laser.
Good.
Love Flower over in Rupert. Where else? Oh, the Chamber of Commerce.
Oh, good.
So
now, has Dr. Feeble Blister Budweiser, whatever his name is?
Well, I checked, and it's going to cost like about $25 to send him a book. So I'll check with him and see if he wants me to do it. I don't know how cheap he is.
Okay. So what's cooking today?
Well, you know, every year, me and my brothers and my sister and our spouses, we take a little trip. This time we went to Jackson Hole.
Oh, I love that.
And you've
that,
been there.
I love Jackson Hole.
Yeah.
Little restaurant called Bubba's.
Oh, yeah.
Got to go to Bubba's.
We didn't make it there, but we made some others. So I'm going to talk about Jackson Hole a little bit here.
Okay.
And, I got to tell you, it was cold. It was like 9-7. So it was a little...
I actually prefer Jackson Hole, my dear friend, Dr. History, in July.
So Jackson Hole.
Oh, yeah, Jackson Hole.
One of the things we did, folks, if you get over that direction in the wintertime, take the sleigh ride pulled by horses
out to the elk,
out to the National Elk Refuge.
We've done that twice.
And we lucked out because there were two big old bulls, big huge racks, fighting.
Ah.
I mean, head to head and pounding and pushing. And the guy that was pulling, driving the wagon, he said, you don't see that very often.
Really?
So that was pretty neat to see.
So how many of your family went over there?
Well, I have three brothers and my sister and our spouses. So there was five of us.
Oh, the kids stayed home.
Oh, yeah. This is strictly an adult thing.
Oh, yeah. I can see that.
It's a getaway.
All right.
So Jackson Hole, as the name kind of ignites the
How did it get its name?
From a guy named Jackson.
Okay.
Yeah. But, you know, you think of the Old West, the snow-capped mountains, the wildlife, you know, and you've been there, the mountains on all sides. And,
right.
Of course, the Snake River starts up in Yellowstone
mm-hmm.
and comes right down through Jackson Hole and comes on right down through where it hooks up with the water from the Henry's
right.
Lake and Island Park.
Right.
But the original settlers did not enjoy lives of simplicity and joy. They struggled to fashion an existence out of this isolated, and it is isolated, kind of a wild and rugged country relying strictly on the natural resources of the land. But their earliest Euro-Americans settled in the late 19th century, and they were kind of considered settlers or squatters, and they lived under an isolated, harsh, and primitive condition, and by their own unwritten code, a set of rules, including what they called mountain law, which is, I guess, whatever they decided, basically.
Did the Indians reside there
yeah.
first?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so, but these early settlers, they were called bachelor settlers, and their struggle to put together a living, they were rough, they were kind of an unruly bunch, enterprising, though, independent, self-sufficient, and they relied heavily at times totally on what they could live off in the valley, you know, the wildlife and whatever, I guess, they could grow. But the valley was inhabited by Native Americans for thousands of years prior to its discovery and colonization by the Americans.
Okay.
So the Indians knew about it, the Native Americans, years and years and years ago.
Do you know who first, as far as being a white man?
Well, there are some theories about that, about who the first were that were in there.
I see.
But the first Americans to enter the mountain valley were trappers and fur traders, mountain men, and they wandered into this legendary valley in the early 19th century. There was good beaver trapping, and they were searching for trade routes, but the Europeans didn't begin to follow until about 80 years later, near the close of the country. So it was really quite isolated. And one thing that for some reason, I was thinking that there were rendezvous in Jackson Hole.
No, I was just going to ask you about that, seriously.
But there weren't.
Didn't they? No, I'm not the history expert you are, but didn't they move down to the Preston area?
Down that way, Grin.
Yeah.
They had, you know, a number of rendezvous around the country.
Right.
And just to the west over the mountains, there's a place called Pierre's Hole.
Right.
And that was definitely a rendezvous place.
Right.
So,
why wasn't Jackson Hole acceptable?
Because it was so isolated, difficult to get into.
Yeah.
So they, I guess, but, you know, I think in the summertime it wouldn't be that bad.
Me neither.
But, you know, Jackson Hole remained wild and remote, isolated, apart from the expansion of the European civilization, and it was protected by enormous distances and inaccessibility. And over the course of its history, the valley was kind of a host to a progression of frontier figures, mountain men, fur traders, miners, explorers, outlaws,
yeah.
U.S. Army cavalry, squatters, and these guys I told you they called bachelor settlers. So the earliest settlers, these bachelor settlers, or so they described themselves, they were bachelor travelers or trappers. That is not to say they all remained unmarried. Over time, a lot of them did find wives and raised families in Jackson Hole. However, for a while, bachelors were pretty much predominantly the citizens.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, it was a frontier town, frontier place.
How much of a town was it?
Not much in the beginning, nothing. There really was no town. It was just settlers here and there.
I see.
You know, cabins.
I see.
They called themselves trappers and certainly did trap, But these frontiersmen should not be confused with the trappers or the mountain men, because they just kind of stayed in this little area. They didn't roam, you know, all over the country like a lot of the real mountain men or fur trappers. But the essentials of civilization were mostly ignored by these early inhabitants of the valley. They viewed themselves not as settlers, homesteaders, or town builders, but rather kind of apart from society. As one person described them, they resembled, quote, lone wolves. Most of them lived like wild animals.
Oh, my. How nice.
But they did provide hunting and guiding for sport hunters.
You're kidding. Way back then?
Yeah. They would actually have people come in, and they would guide them for elk and moose, deer.
Now, that surprises me.
Well, it did me, too. But generally, not farming or ranching was not part of that so much. As one of them stated in his memoir, they were, quote, homeless, reckless, straight-shooting, and hard-drinking set. Does that kind of describe...
It does, and there enters a question. Where did they get their supplies?
You know, I suppose they had to go out in the summertime and try to get what they needed for the winter, because they wouldn't be leaving. I mean, you've been in there in the winter, maybe.
Oh,
and you just don't go through those
Not
passes.
Not a place I want to be.
No. I mean, the snow gets pretty deep over there. But, you know, the early arrivals in the valley were a mixed bag of frontiersmen and Old West characters, Civil War veterans, discharged soldiers, old Indian fighters, Union Pacific Railroad construction workers.
You're asking for trouble.
Bull whackers and freighters, prospectors and trappers, commercial hide and meat hunters, recent immigrants, runaways,
oh my,
down on their luck miners,
oh my,
opportunists, and refuges from the law.
So when they went in there to kind of get away from the rest of civilization, did they build quite a few cabins and or...
As much as possible. Dugouts, sod houses, not...
Are any of those still there?
I doubt it, really.
I see.
But there was a guy named Dr. John Mitchell, and he was visiting the hole in 1896. And he termed these people, quote, a community of scalawags, renegades, discharged soldiers, and predestined stinkers.
Oh, that kind of sums it up. I bet the Chamber of Commerce loved that.
So the mountain men and the fur traders, they left journals, accounts, and letters. Government expeditions file extensive and detailed reports, but for the most part, Jackson Hole's early bachelor settlers recorded little. They just didn't write much. Now, there's a lot of mountain men that did keep journals.
I was just going to ask you the journals and everything, but one thing you never mentioned with all your scallywags and everything else, it doesn't sound like the population of women was very big.
Probably not, no. But the early history for Jackson Hole settlement is generally kind of sketchy, because they just didn't write much back then. And one reason for this was that the early population consisted largely, as I said, adventurers, drifters, fugitives, recluse from, and basically riffraff, who chose life on the fringe of civilization.
Did they implement their own law?
Yeah, that mountain law I talked about.
Yeah.
So, whatever that looked like. I don't know if it's kind of a vigilante
type
thing.
Sounds kind of harsh, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, I guess you wouldn't want to be caught stealing your neighbor's horse. I'm just going to say that.
I would.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but a lot of these people stayed in Jackson Hole, and as it grew and grew, became kind of the stand-up citizens of Jackson Hole, as it started to become a town.
Now, I'm going to ask you another dumb question. Are some of the families that were there as the first inhabitants, did they, through generations, stay there?
You know, when we went out to the National Elk Refuge, they talked about some families that had been there for many, many years. And the refuge, I think, was owned by some of those families that,
really?
And I think, still do live over there.
Wow. Yeah.
But, you know, like I said, the valley appealed to shadowy figures because it was so remote and out of the way. Even after territorial law was established, the nearest law office was located in Evanston, Wyoming, 250 miles away by horseback. And when the winter snow closed off these mountain passes, no one could get in or out of the valley. So, they just didn't have law, so to speak, like official.
Now, I would imagine you said Evanston was 250 miles away, and I've been to Evanston 1,000 times.
Yeah.
That's probably the railhead or whatever for their supplies, and then they went down and got them there?
you know, that may be the closest railhead, you know, to get supplies.
Because wouldn't a lot of that stuff come out of Salt Lake to Evanston?
Probably, yeah. And I don't know if Rawlins or one of those is closer.
No, Evanston would be.
Would have to be closer, the closest. Yeah. So, but again, it was a place for people to kind of basically kind of hide out.
Wow. You know?
So, but the whole early squatters pretty much enforced their own code of law through what they called citizen committees. And as I said, probably vigilante action or this mountain law we talked about. And I think that those people, even though there were some outlaws and some bad people in there, I suspect they tried to toe the line.
I was going to say, you wouldn't want to get out of line there.
Because if you wanted to stay there, you better not be doing
something. Well, you might stay there permanently.
Underground.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for an interval in time, the inhabitants of Jackson Hole were able to avoid close public scrutiny. They certainly did not fit the image of Hollywood's mythical and romanticized God-fearing noble pioneers.
Mm-hmm.
Just a little different.
Mm-hmm.
But violence and lawlessness did prevail in several early day incidents involving vigilante actions. For example, in 1892, there was something called the Cunningham Ranch Shootout.
Uh-huh.
And then there was what they called Jackson Hole's Indian War of 1895, and a nighttime warning delivered by masked riders to elk tuskers to clear out of the valley or be shot. So people used to go, and still do, go hunt for antlers,
yeah,
you know, up in the mountains.
Yeah.
So no historian has ever been able to satisfactorily reconstruct this 1892 Cunningham Ranch Shootout, where two cowboys, alleged horse rustlers, were gunned down by a posse recruited from the Hole's settlers.
Really?
They took care of two supposedly cowboys that were stealing horses.
Mm.
And then details of the event were purposely confounded by the participants and local residents to avoid any thing that the law might come in and say, hey, you guys shouldn't have shot those two guys.
Oh, they shot them.
Yeah, killed them.
Oh.
So that took care of any horse rustling there for a while.
Well, you know, sometimes the most lawless society is the most law-filled.
Yeah, because you just don't want to cross.
Yeah, you don't want to cross these guys.
And then,
they had nothing to lose.
Right. Now, the 1895 Jackson Hole Indian War was about Native American federal treaty rights versus states' rights. Okay, the settlers challenged federal authority to enforce Indian hunting and treaty rights. Besides rumors, the so-called war involved the killing by settlers, and some called it murder, of an old and near-blind Bannock tribesman, wounding another, and the capture of an Indian child.
Mm.
And that's really about all we know about that so-called Indian 1895 Jackson Hole Indian War.
You know, when you think about it, Ken, 1894-95, right in that area, you're talking right almost at the turn of the century, and a lot of what you think about Jackson Hole, you'd think you'd be talking about the 1840s or 1850s.
Right. Yeah, it's like they're 40 or 50 years behind.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there's a guy named John Holland and a guy named Johnny Carnes, and his part, Native American wife, Millie, are traditionally credited with being Jackson Hole's first permanent settlers in 1884.
Wow.
So they're considered the first, but there were a lot of them probably that were in and out, you know, that didn't stay. But complicating the claim is the fact that other Americans were residing year-round in the valley at that same time period. There was a guy named Lieutenant Gustav Doan, who found a guy named John Pierce living in a crude cabin in 1876. So, you know, when really was the first permanent ones? But as I said, it was a kind of a classless society. The whole really was the last of the Old West. In a land of seemingly unlimited natural resources, they practiced self-reliance, they endured hardships, they capitalized on the free God-given natural resources at hand for livelihood.
Did they kind of help each other?
I think they must have, you know. That was something that was pretty common. You know, you helped out your neighbors back then.
You know, like the raising, and I mean the building of a cabin.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder if they all kind of pitched in and helped everybody
like
else.
Like a barn raising.
Yeah.
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 And I'm suspecting that they did help each other out. I would like to think they did. But modern day Jackson Hole is no way like it was a century ago.
Oh, no.
I mean, it continues to attract wannabe mountain men, Hollywood cowboys, adventure seekers, sportsmen.
Kind of an aura about Jackson Hole.
There is, you know, and 30,000 people now.
Is it that big?
Well, now, this book is fairly recent. It's called The Jackson Hole Settlement Chronicles.
Wow.
And
30,000 people.
Yeah. And you know, I had not been there for probably 30 years.
Really?
Yeah. And so when I drove in there and looked on both sides of the road, and I mean,
there's a lot of traffic that goes through there.
A lot of traffic. But you get into downtown Jackson Hole to that center square that has the elk arches. It's still kind of a fun old western town.
Something was said to me one time about Jackson Hole, that if you want to see and meet almost everybody in the world, sit on the bench outside of a Jackson Hole store.
Yes. Well, we went into a few stores.
I'll bet you did.
And the price range was just a little out of my range.
Oh, really?
By a few thousands and thousands of dollars. I mean,
it's high.
Yeah, I had a hard time. I had to buy a stocking cap, and I wasn't going to buy a $30 one. I found one for about $12.
One thing about you, you're economical. Some cheap. People say cheap.
Yeah, well, I'll admit it. I'm cheap.
We got a minute left.
So, folks, if you get over there, it is a fun place to go. And as Zeb said, summertime is a great time to.
Oh, yeah.
And years ago, my wife and I did a float trip down the out of the north end of Jackson Hole, which is very calm, no rapids, and you can see eagles and the wildlife.
Yeah.
But if you go on the southern end, that's when you can hit the rapids that head towards Palisades Reservoir.
Absolutely.